so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah. We're rolling, man. It's time for another Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. This is a little bit weird for me today. I think I requested this, but you've got the video feed working today, so I can actually see you as we're having this conversation.
Oh, yeah?
Did you not know that?
I wasn't. I've been hitting the video button instead of the audio button when I pick up the phone lately for some reason. I could light the situation better, or I could turn it off.
No, it's good. It's good. I sort of like knowing the reactions on your face. Now, I'm at a computer with no camera, so I can't reciprocate.
Can you see my face? It looks super dark on my end.
Yeah, I can see your face.
All right, then let's roll.
Yeah. I was going to ask what it was you were just smoking right now, but I probably already knew. all right, so lots to cover on the Twitter department this week. We're all over the place. Should we start with homework? Because I actually did the assignment this week.
Woo! Yeah, seriously, you're trying to like get me in trouble when you're the bad student in this podcast.
You know what? I think it ought to be incumbent on the audience to occasionally check in and remind me of what the homework is.
As long as it's not incumbent on me, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. At Madden on Air on the Twitter if you want to harass me and make sure I do the homework for the show every week.
Madden is like a child. If you want him to do his homework, you have to be his parent.
I got a lot of stuff going on, man. but I did do this week's assignment, which was the Loyal Carner record. Whose name is escaping me, of course, in the moment. What's the name of the
album? It's not in front of me either. Yesterday's Gone.
Where did you find this dude?
That's a great question. I don't even remember. A lot of stuff like this I come across either because it's in a new – I get a new release email that just sort of lists new releases, and I jump it grab a Spotify or a YouTube of things that sound interesting on name value alone, essentially, or on, you know, a combination of review and genre. And then I just sort of I'm a denizen of the internet, and things get recommended. So I don't know specifically.
Do you have business cards that say denizen of the internet?
Yes, I really wanted to say that. That's my official title now. It's all I do.
It's going to my Twitter bio. Denizen of the internet.
Oh, I should put that in my Twitter bio.
Yeah. Well, all right. We'll so you, from your internet denizening,
yes,
you found Loyal Carner.
Yeah.
An English rapper, a very English rapper.
Yeah,
it's weird.
You can hear it.
You know, I don't know. Serendipity, right, is the term where it, you know what I mean, like. You know, for that thing where in this particular example, like I probably went months with anyone putting the words English and rapper together in the same sentence.
Uh-huh.
And then like over the span of like 3 days, I had a bunch of friends mention all the English rap happening right now, including you and this Loyal Carner record. So maybe there's something happening over there that I don't know about. Have you been What is your, you know, pre this, do you have an affinity for British rap? Like, what is your feeling about British hip hop?
That's a good question. I try to check in. I've heard most of I love hip hop, so I try to hear most of the new hip hop, which is occasionally an English person. It's usually not my favorite.
Yeah, so I feel like most American hip hop fans don't take it very seriously. You know what I mean?
That's somewhat true. You mentioned the Streets last time. I was a big fan of the Streets. That was a while back, obviously.
Yeah.
There's a guy. I think it's Leaf is the pronunciation. Do you know who I'm talking about? I think, but no. Like with a one instead of an I.
No. I mean, you know.
Dizzy Rascal was someone that I, you know, not my favorite, but I took seriously and paid attention to. Oh, no, Leaf is not the British guy.
Yeah.
There's look, there it's like I'm trying to think of a relevant comparison. You know, it's German NBA players.
Yeah, like
there aren't a lot of great ones.
A little
but
bit of a novelty aspect to it.
There is a novelty.
Oh, look at that guy with the accent. I like that accent, and he's rapping. Good for you. You know what I mean?
Uh huh. The list of really great British rappers is short.
It's very short. Are you putting Loyal Carner on it?
I don't know if one album makes you great. But
you're into this.
I like this album. You didn't like it?
I did like the album, but I would say for me, 85 to 90% of it was the production. I thought the beats were really great. I really liked the organic kind of guitar, insertions into a lot of these songs in a way like, you know, sometimes you throw a guitar in a hip hop song and it feels really tacked on and forced or weird. And this didn't do that at all. There was a lot of really cool, like, old school beats.
So yes.
I have no idea who made the record. The beats on it were really interesting to me.
It's interesting you say that. Because to me, the beats are like, they are, I think, largely instrumentated, you know, they're played on instruments, but they sound like the hip hop you and I loved in the 90s. They sound like the soul sample heavy type of stuff.
Yeah,
that, you know, I think I mentioned Nas last week. Like, this album musically has the feel of almost an Illmatic, despite the fact that I'm not sure there are any samples on it. And I thought that was really cool. I would agree with you that the production is probably the best part. And I also don't know exactly how we credit that out. I can look at who the producers are, but I think Loyal Carner gets some credit for that.
Sure. I'm not like this guy's worthless and he just found somebody good to make the record. I'm sure it's part of the style.
And I also think I don't want to sell him short either, because he's very good on these. He's not the sort of rapper where you hear his flow or his lyrics and you're like, oh my God, my mind is blown. I've never heard. Yeah. But he's a good rapper, and it's good stuff. You know what I mean? It may not be earth-shattering flow, but he's a good rapper with an excellent collection of songs here.
I got no beef with it. This is a good, like, I'm going to throw down some FIFA and I want to have a record on while I'm doing that. I'm not paying a super ton of attention to the lyrics.
Uh-huh. You know, well, the other thing is, really, you know, this is the debut album. So hopefully it gets even better. But
I did try working out with this record and I would not recommend that.
What'd you say?
I did try working out with this record, and I would not recommend that.
No, it's pretty chill.
Yeah, it was like
it is not.
This is the wrong.
It's not going to get you fired up.
Looking on Loyal Carner's
record, I'm going to push you through that wall.
Wikipedia page, and it turns out he's a Liverpool supporter, so now I hate him.
Oh, but, wow! Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
So you have to watch out with that with these British rappers. You never know if they have unfriendly allegiances.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. Man.
Oh, I've missed the priorities in life. All right, so Loyal Carner, that's a solid one, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the most you've liked an album I've recommended in a while, even though it may have seemed lukewarm.
I would agree. I don't know about that. The Migos record was pretty good. I did like that one.
Which one?
The Migos record.
Oh, Migos. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, not that that's a revolutionary statement, but the Migos record
was
good.
No, that was a little more straight. But you would have heard that whether I recommended it or not.
Correct. Probably, I would have gotten that one eventually. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I feel proud of this recommendation. I feel like Loyal Carner is somebody to watch. I mean, you know, we'll see.
I mean, is the record – I guess this is sort of – now in a Spotify world, it's sort of an anachronism. But is anyone putting out the record here? Like, is it being distributed in America?
That's a great question, and I don't know, in part because it's on Spotify, and that's how I listen to it. It's been reviewed.
Yeah. Well, I think the question is, you know, will you be seeing him around a little bit, you know, in terms of whether he's going to be a guy to watch, at least here in the States? So,
well, I mean, I guess we'll find out. There's no way to know, but I do think he's gotten enough critical attention to be a guy.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. There's always some interesting stuff happening over there across the
pond. He is touring the United States. He'll be playing at the Rickshaw Stop in San Francisco. All so right. That gives you an idea. It's a pretty small following in America.
Is that one? If that'll be a pop scene show?
They like the British accent, I'll have to check. It's yeah. I have the date in front of me. But you know, couple is playing L.A., SF, couple New York, couple D.C. You know, like he's at least trying. And then bigger shows in London and. And
it's really fascinating when you talk to British artists who come over here, particularly now being in Minneapolis. You know, it's a little less so in San Francisco, but they like, especially if they're coming over for the first time, like just getting the sense of how large, you know, physically the United States is, and how difficult and committed you have to be to tour it in a van. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. To give you an idea, in London he's playing an almost 5,000 person venue.
Right.
So
you're used to playing these big shows and these big venues, and now you're playing crappy clubs in this massive country, and you have to be willing to do it for weeks on end. And it's why not as many British acts break over here as you expect. Back because they don't want to put the work in.
Yeah, Rickshaw Stop's about 400, so he's playing places more than 10 times as big in the UK, which makes sense. But again, debut album, young guy. I think he's, let's see, I think he's in his early 20s, so hopefully there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, agreed. And he changes teams, hopefully. All right, so let's bounce.
Something tells me you changing teams is more likely than him changing teams.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Let's bounce around to I don't know, what should we cover next? You got the list of topics this week.
I got the list. Let's go television.
Okay.
Or internet television anyway, because one of our favorite shows is back.
Which show might that be?
Love, man.
Yeah, Love, man. I was super into this season of Love. I was super into the last season of Love now that I realize it.
And yeah, you know, it's funny. I was super into last season of Love. I love these characters. I love the Apatow-ish, you know, ness of everything. And when it was coming back, I mentioned to my sister, oh, are you watching Love? And she was like, you know, I watched a couple episodes, but it didn't really move me for whatever reason, but I should try again. And then like 2 days later, I got a call saying, I just finished both seasons of Love. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's I had this thing, and it, you know, I'm assuming a lot of people go through this. It's rare for me. Where I kind of had like binge sadness
when it ended.
Yeah, where like I loved the show, I was excited for it to come out, and I, you know, like I heard about it a couple days before, so I had a couple days of anticipation. The show came out on Friday. I finished the whole thing by Saturday night, and then I was like, oh shit, it's gonna be another year before there's any more of these, and I was like kind of sad, you know.
Yep.
So yeah, so binge sadness. I did not pace myself well on this show, but yeah, I was definitely into it, and we don't have to get too far into the season, but I really enjoyed, because you haven't finished it yet, right?
Correct. I'm somewhere around halfway through.
I really enjoyed the idea of making Paul Rust's character, you know, his kind of his Midwestern niceness. I thought the show did a really good job of showing how they use it, how he – that can be kind of used as a bludgeon. You know what I mean? That it really masks something something else. Like all people pleasers sort of – and I say that as one – sort of have that in them, you know, where it's like, yeah, we're nice, but it's really a mask for something. And I think this sort of gets into what that can do in a relationship. I just think – this show nails the vibe of two people in a way that's it's really winning and charming, but very natural and real. And, you know, I don't know. Like, some people don't like watching shows about people who have flaws, you know, or who aren't always likable. I've never been one of those people, and I just enjoy, you know, watching these two damaged people try to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, she's more damaged, I think, pretty clearly, right? But I don't think either of them are, like, untouchable damaged. And I don't mean that sounded terrible. All I mean is inaccessible to normal people.
Sure.
To like average damaged people.
And when you say
like,
she's
I don't feel like I am a pity case exactly. But you know, Paul Rust is no more damaged than me. And so it's the sort of it's the sort of thing that I think most people have experienced where you're trying to navigate a newish relationship and you like the other person, but like you start to feel a little crazy at times and you start wondering if they're crazy. Like it can just be tough.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing is it's like you could say, yes, the Mickey character is more damaged in the sense of like more outwardly bad, traumatic things are happening in her life. She's got a couple of addictions and she does some crazy things.
Right.
But I think the show sort of makes the point that, yes, this is the person you would see is more damaged, but really we're all damaged. And even if, you know, things that maybe are less traumatic have happened to us, the way that we internalize those things may be just as vicious as you know, those things that, you
and
know, would be really traumatic.
And
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and problematic for the goal, which presumably is, you know, to have a reasonable and successful relationship.
And I should say, like, we've now made the show, I think, sound maybe less fun than it is, because at the same time, it's also very light and funny, and it has that Apatow tone, and there's a sort of constant flow of semi-ridiculous supporting characters who are also great in their own way, and we're getting to know some of them a little more in this season, and that's enjoyable as well. So I just think, like, in the tradition of Freaks and Geeks and you know, some of Apatow's television work, like, I, you know, mixed with a little bit of some, like, girls, you know what I mean? Some of the naturalism or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's all there.
The awkward hilarity of girls. I agree. It's a delightful show. I just think that, I mean, I don't know Paul Rust as an actor. I always forget how to pronounce her first name and what her last name is. Is it Gillian Jacobs?
You know, I always say Gillian, but I think it actually is Gillian. I think she's
so spectacular. I'm really enchanted by her as an actress. And I think the subtle differences between Britta, for instance, from Community and this character, I think reflect her talent for really embodying a person.
Yeah. She's like, for a person who, you know, is very classically pretty, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, she is able to convey kind of just the general messiness of her life.
That's so true.
So
that
well.
She is like very classically beautiful. I mean, down to the blonde hair and like statuesque features. Like, she really is sort of the she could be the cookie cutter attractive girl, and she just manages to be so much more in everything I've ever seen her in. God, she's great. She's really great.
It's done really well. And Paul Rust, you know, has a big creative part in the show. It's one of the creators.
Yeah, Paul Rust, I think, is more a creator than an actor. And I don't know that I've ever seen him as an actor before this show.
So, but, and he takes a role that could easily be very Woody Allen knockoff.
He does his own thing with it, though. That's a good point. Like, he doesn't fold into a neurotic stereotype, which is good.
Even though he's completely neurotic.
Yes. Yeah, totally. But it's this cute it feels more like someone you know than someone you've seen on film a thousand times before.
Agreed. So, yeah, I can't recommend Love highly enough. Like I said, I don't know if we made it sound fun enough. This was an easy binge. Like, it was a, I don't really want to get up and go do anything else. There's another one of these that's coming on in 30 seconds, and I'm good with that kind of show for me. So,
yeah, I had a nice little run to get through the five that I saw, but I have stalled out with all the various shows you're making me watch. You got me on a real tight schedule.
It's peak TV, man. Speaking of which, how is your American's catch-up coming along?
It's coming slowly but surely. I'm a little disappointed with myself. I thought I'd have more binge time, but I'm nearly halfway through season one, so I'm like five or six episodes in. They've got Margot Martindale has settled in, which is fun. She I don't know, is she the best at being the person who looks like a mom and occasionally and sort of projects mom, but then can instantly project murderer, like murdery mom, like not in a Kathleen Turner serial mom way, but in like a if you cross me you will die.
Yeah, there's a little bit. She does do a little bit of that for sure.
Like,
yeah.
There's just, it's like a look. It's not much. It's like a look or a sentence where it's like, oh, she looks like the mom that made you apple pie after school just because it was a Tuesday. But then all of a sudden, there's like the little glimpse where it's like, oh, but she would kill me dead.
Mm-hmm. The very nature of this show with the spies and the disguises, hopefully by now you've gotten a sense of the tremendous wig budget that is necessary for this show.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because Matthew Rhys... You wouldn't think this way, I guess, but Matthew Rhys, it seems like, needs a different wig for every day of the week.
there's a fair amount, yeah.
Whereas Kerry Russell just kind of like puts her hair in a ponytail or like straightens it.
Yeah,
you know?
Although
and then it's like she's good to go.
She'll throw a wig on from time to time. There's also a lot of glasses and mustaches,
yes,
and
mustaches
things like
and
that.
Glasses, yeah. Are yeah.
but what I was gonna say is, you know, because there are these situations where you have characters literally hiding in plain sight or whatever, yeah. There's a lot of knowing looks, and there's a lot of personal history between characters that a lot of unspoken acting is required in, and the acting level is so good on the show that it, and you know this that goes consistently across several seasons. So does it feel like homework for you kind of plowing through these? It's not the easy, like, it's not like Love where it's a super light, fun, easy
right.
watch. So
well,
I,
that's the
I
other
see
thing is unlike something like Love or even like a for me a Game of Thrones, which is a lot, but it's just so it sucks you right down the rabbit hole. When I watch an episode of The Americans, I usually am not ready for another one right afterwards. So I think that's part of been part of what has slowed me down
and
as well.
It requires a fair amount of attention. Like there's
yes,
subtle things happening and a lot of subtitles actually.
Yeah, like I have plenty of TV that I'll throw on at midnight, and if I doze off for a minute or two or get distracted for a minute or two, it's no big deal. But that won't work for this. So. Yeah. That's probably why it's a little slower going than I would like, but I'm getting through a few episodes a week, basically.
All right. I want to know. I feel like this is going to be like a Wire thing where it's like you're going to hit a point. It's going to take you a minute, and you're going to hit a point where you're like just fully all in.
I'm sure I will.
And I want to be around. I want to be around.
Like, I have no complaints. Yeah. You know what I mean? I have no complaints right now about The Americans. Everything is on point. It's good. It's interesting. I'm in. But I haven't had a revelatory moment yet.
Yeah, there's some folks you still have yet to meet that I think where you know once this thing gets up and going. So, so I'm excited about The Americans. The current season of The Americans, also maybe starting a little bit slowly, but you can tell that they are gripping the vice a little bit. And then it's gonna, you know, this is a show that tends to ratchet up in tension, you know, the tension from week to week. There's usually sort of you know, a single week arc where they have like kind of a mission that's also juxtaposed with the ongoing story around them. So,
yeah,
it's been a good season so far. The Americans continues to be top flight TV, and we were sort of talking about this because we're going to talk about Feud here in a second. But FX is just it's just on a crazy roll. When you think about the shows that we have loved this year, whether it be Atlanta or Better Things, Fargo and OJ, either of which, you know, those are probably my top two shows.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, the last year or so, to the Americans, Feud
You're the Worst.
Formidable. Yeah, You're the Worst.
Always Sunny is still.
Always Sunny. Yeah. Like,
Baskets, if you're into that sort of thing.
I feel like they're batting like 80, 90% to the point where.
And they're playing, they're it's playoff baseball. They're not batting 80, 90% on gimmies. I mean, the shows that to invest in Atlanta was not an obvious thing.
Yeah. So, and even
to empower, to continue to air a show like The Americans is not an obvious thing.
Yeah.
To you know, invest in auteurs like Noah Hawley and frankly, to put Always Sunny on television in the first place in 2005 was almost insane.
Yeah, they,
that,
like,
that was in a way,
YouTube,
that was kind of the beginning of
right?
what FX has become.
Yeah, and so it's – I just think that right now, you know, and even the misses, right? Like, I didn't enjoy Taboo.
Mm-hmm. But it's ambitious.
Yeah. You know, they really they took a shot, and it's not like a show that was didn't have redeeming qualities. It kind of just wasn't for me. So,
right. I mean, Justified is over now, obviously, yeah. but Justified and Sons of Anarchy are seminal for people.
Yeah, and
I haven't watched either of them.
Going
but,
back
but
to the Shield,
love those
which shows. I think was also a big part of the start of the identity of this yeah. network. That was a real seminal show for me. And, you know, and I think some would argue maybe part of the, you know, one of the departure points for this sort of peak TV era that
yeah.
we're in
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
I just think that the, you know, it's really been an incredible run. And I feel like I can say that this is the best channel on television right now.
Archer. We forgot Archer.
Yeah. If FX is debuting a new show, I'm now going to check it out because FX has a new show on. And I don't
absolutely.
Really. Can you say that about anything else? Sometimes HBO is like that.
HBO is like that.
Do you try everything HBO has to offer?
I mean, almost. But, you know, like I said, I haven't watched Sons of Anarchy or Justified. So
right.
I don't try everything anyone. And these are all, by the way, Justified, Sons of Anarchy, that one a little less so. But certainly Justified, certainly, the HBO stuff. That I've missed. They're choices that I've made mostly out of limited time, not out of lack of desire. Like those are two channels, and probably the only two where I am at least interested in putting eyes on anything they do because the history is so good.
But I don't,
and because I trust the decision makers.
I don't think people think of FX in the same way that they do HBO. Am I crazy about that?
No, but that may start to change because again, it's pretty uncanny to pull up the list of shows. Any other – like if you just type FX television shows into Google, the list you get is tremendous.
We didn't
and
even
I'm
mention
not sure
Louis,
that
by
happens.
The way.
What'd you say?
We didn't even mention Louis, by the way.
I know. Yeah. Well, I wasn't sure if that was still technically on or not.
I think it is. I think it is still technically a thing.
And I don't know if you heard me say Baskets.
I did hear you say Baskets. Baskets is one I do not watch.
It's a weird show, but it's – again, it's the choice to give Zach Galifianakis freedom to make an oddball sort of definitely funny but without a lot of laugh-out-loud moments show about a French-trained rodeo clown. It's insane, but it reflects it, you know, and it's similar maybe more to – maybe Netflix is the more relevant comparison in this regard in that they seem to be saying if they find someone creative that they think is good, here's a few bucks. Go do your thing and bring it back, and we think you'll be good.
Right, except because Netflix does that, but the batting average in Netflix is so much lower. That's the thing about it that's amazing to me, is that that kind of approach should yield Netflix-like results, where like one out of every three or four things is great. You know what I mean? And they're seven out of 10, you know?
Don't you think, though, that like if Netflix had a more... I actually don't know.
Had a shorter broadcast schedule.
A shorter broadcast schedule, and also like a pilot process similar to television. Like, I don't know exactly how that works for Netflix, but something tells me that a lot of the something tells me the overall batting average is not totally dissimilar, but FX waits a little longer in the process to hand out the cash, if that makes sense. Like I feel like Netflix is taking a scattershot approach. They're machine gunning. They're spraying more.
Yeah, see, I just feel like Netflix has more money, so they take more shots.
That's what I'm saying. they have more money, so they're less – it's not that they're being careless, but I think they're probably less particular about what they choose to activate, whereas FX has limited time. Probably more than budget. It's probably more time than anything. And so if they're going to air shows as critical TV properties in important time slots, they're going to be a little more stringent. But nevertheless, like there's no world in which it makes sense that FX people are interfering in any way with Always Sunny or Atlanta or Louie or Archer. Like, these shows are clearly being executed with their own vision outside of management influence.
Yeah, we didn't mention Legion.
You're the worst.
We didn't mention American Horror Story, which I don't watch, but yeah, lots of people love, you know? So, like, there's
–
It's endless, and
all the stuff, you know, American Horror Story, obviously, and I don't watch it either, but obviously there's some pulp to that, you know, the Archer, obviously there's some silliness to that, but all of these things are elevated from a critical value standpoint as well. Even things like Sons of Anarchy or Justified, they are not the unthinking versions of those shows that might have been on television 15 years ago.
Have you spent more? I think we've talked about this. We haven't spent a ton of time with Justified, right?
No, I've only seen a couple of episodes, but it's definitely on my list of shows to watch.
Yeah, it's a good one. All right, so let's talk about the latest offering from FX. I guess it's the latest offering. Feud.
Yes.
Now, so you've taken the step of – so Feud, for those who don't know, is about the feud between Joan Crawford and Bette Davis. You know, when they did a movie together in – what was it?
1962.
So they're aging starlets by then. They'd come out of the studio system in the 30s, I guess, and kind of been late 30s, at least for Joan. And, you know, had been stars in the 40s and 50s and now were fading a little bit. And now they decided to do a movie together because that was the best way to get the movie made. You know, but their professional rivalry really comes to a head. Now, you've actually seen the movie that they did together.
Yeah, they were both over 50 during the filming. Bette Davis was 54. And Joan Crawford, I think, a couple years older. Her birth date is questioned.
I think, of course it is.
But 58, I think, is her likely age during the filming of the movie, or at least when it came out, somewhere around there. So, but they're both mid-50s, essentially. And it was the best way to get the movie made. And also, I think they were both trying to revive careers to a degree, because as it's probably only a little better now, it was awful tough for women over 50.
That's sort of what I meant. Was like they weren't – when I say it's the best way to get the movie made, that no one was going to hire them to star in a movie on their own, really.
That is certainly what they attempt to convey in Feud. Then I'll take them at their word on that. So a couple of things. I watched Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, which is the movie they're filming, because I wanted a little bit of context for what I was watching, and also because my dad – I think I had seen it before years ago, but it's one of my dad's favorite movies for God knows what reason. And so he was like, yeah, yeah, it'll make Feud much better. You got to watch Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. And it's perfectly good. It's very dated. It's a thriller, I think you would say. Horror is a stretch, but it's a disturbing thriller type of film.
The television show paints it as Hitchcockian. I don't know.
It is an attempt at Hitchcockian, I would say, yes. Okay. I think it probably falls, for me, falls a little short of Hitchcockian, but it's
fun to say Hitchcockian, isn't it?
It sure is. But it's a suspenseful movie. It's very well acted by both of them, although it's just dated. I don't know how better to criticize it, because it doesn't deserve criticism per se. It's just of its time. It's very much of 1962. There's a lot of the oh my, raising your hand to your head to express emotion. It's
black
just,
people are scary. Is that a thing?
No,
actually, just no black people at all.
No, there's the only black character is definitely a positive. That might be, it's probably the most progressive thing about the film is actually she is a maid, so not that progressive.
Okay, right, of course.
But she's like she's an ally. She's a potential positive character right up until the point where she's brutally murdered.
I was just about to say it's summarily dismissed.
But that's not it's not in the first 20 minutes.
I haven't
anything,
seen the
so.
Movie by the way, so I'm just guessing that she was going to get killed. But of course,
well, it's a movie where several. But I think like at least half of the characters who appear on screen for more than 5 minutes get killed in this movie.
Okay.
But it's not that bloody either. It's just there. It's a combination of 1960s acting and directing styles that make it feel dated, and the fact that, you know, I think to that time it probably had the suspense value of like a Get Out, but to 2017 it's like barely anybody dies. I wasn't that afraid.
Gotcha. All right.
So I'm not saying it's not worth seeing. It's a classic film that has redeeming value.
Is
for
Feud
me,
worth seeing in your mind?
What'd you say?
Is Feud worth seeing in your mind?
Yes, if only to watch Susan Sarandon be Betty Davis.
She kills it.
that was
my immediate takeaway.
Tremendous.
Like, just the quiet viciousness is outstanding.
And when you see that, I feel like watching Baby Jane was helpful in that regard, is seeing the powerhouse performance that Betty Davis gives in the movie, because it is really, she is really great. She is really excellent. A little hammy, but again, that's sort of the time. She's just great as this psycho. And knowing a little bit about who Betty Davis is as a person and is feminist the right word? I think it probably is. Sarandon is just perfect.
Yeah.
And she is. She's a force of nature.
And it's, you know, I mean, you can tell, at least in the story, that Joan Crawford is somewhat jealous of her acting ability and craves her respect because she knows she's that good. And and Sarandon conveys that, I think, very well in
absolutely.
And I should say Jessica Lange, I think, does a really good job as Joan. You know, that's
a
little bit more worn
territory,
too. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's a more understated. It's tricky to have to play next to A, Susan Sarandon, and B, the dynamic that they're clearly trying to show between Davis and Crawford, that, like, you know, Joan Crawford is an older woman than Betty Davis, but one who clearly looks up to Davis from a perspective of A, her real life attitude. And the way she sort of seems to say screw it to everybody who doesn't get on board. And B, she's a dynamo on screen, you know, and that comes across. That's something that I found myself thinking about as I watched Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, is Joan Crawford doing some things that are like a little too big acting wise. As she's clearly trying to pull a little bit of focus away from Bette Davis during this movie, because Bette Davis just has this much less effort seeming dynamism on the screen. It's one of those things that's hard to explain, but it's a phenomenon that lasts to this day. There are just some people who, when they're on a screen, yank your attention in a way that does not necessarily seem to line up with who they are or what they're even doing. Scarlett Johansson is one like that for me.
Scarlett Johansson.
She's just like your eyes, like, get yanked out of your skull towards the screen. And yeah, I mean, being attractive is part of that. Although Bette Davis is certainly not attractive in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. But it's just some people have this incredible quality on screen, and Bette Davis is one of them. And so seeing that in the film and then watching Jessica Lange as Joan Crawford try to convey that, and I think she does a tremendous job in a role that requires more subtlety than what Susan Sarandon is doing, although certainly Susan Sarandon is the standout of this show.
Agreed, so far at least. I mean, we're a couple of episodes in, so
there's plenty more to do. And I feel like there's one or two pretty big actors that weren't even in the first episode or two that are coming down the pike. And by the way, the little interstitials with Kathy Bates and
Catherine Zeta-Jones
as actresses later, like gossiping on film about the feud, those are just great too.
Yeah, the casting really is tremendous, and you know, there's some top-notch folks here, Alfred Molina's and Stanley Tucci's, and they dug in the top character actor drawer to fill out the show.
They really did. And you know what, how old is Susan Sarandon? She's 70. Holy Moses.
Yeah. Yep. That's the thing.
So funny. I would have guessed she was in her mid-50s without thinking. If I had thought about it, I'd have realized, obviously, she's older. But
older was a long time ago, man.
She was. But she looks, first of all, like she's in her friggin' mid-50s. But maybe more to the point, she can carry it. She's still so good. She could be a leading lady in film. And it's a shame maybe there aren't enough parts for septuagenarian women. But my God, is she good.
Yep.
And I wish I found myself thinking during almost every minute of her screen time on Feud, like, why is there not more Susan Sarandon in my life?
I don't know. Maybe it's time for a Netflix deep dive. The last thing that she did.
Yeah, what do you remember from Susan Sarandon most recently? Well, previous
asking me what I remember is probably bad right now because I'm currently on her IMDb page. But yeah, it really. I mean, she's been in some things. You know, she was in Zoolander too.
Yeah, and, but that's like a cameo.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I'm trying to think of like the last thing that, you know, that I really saw her in. Like scrolling down, she's working a lot. a lot of TV spots.
This is my point. Why isn't she
Jeff Who Lives at Home, I think, was probably the last thing I saw her in.
Yeah. That's where I'm at too. Robot and Frank, I didn't see.
That was like 2011.
Oh, she was in Cloud Atlas. Okay, but Cloud Atlas even was 2012. And why isn't she's in Tammy. That's right. That's not a great.
Yeah, I didn't see Tammy. She was in Twilight. I didn't know that.
Why isn't Susan Sarandon getting better parts, damn it?
Right? That wasn't too long after Dead Man Walking.
Wait, what?
She was in Twilight. I didn't know that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can tell I haven't seen Twilight. But good for Susan Sarandon. I'm glad
she's excellent. I wish she was getting more work that I was seeing. I guess she's doing fine, but I would love to be seeing more of Susan Sarandon. I think she is awesome.
And I will say, I you know, I have some issues with Ryan Murphy stuff. I think his excesses
get
a little
understated overall.
I agree, and I think, you know, his flair for camp, you know what I mean, fits very well into this project. It's so right in his wheelhouse. That yeah. when he goes a little over the top, it's actually in a situation where maybe it's warranted or helpful. So, yeah. So I think this is one that's worth checking out.
Totally agree. I assume it will become even more like electric as the feud heats up, right? I mean, I certainly have expectations of like things are gonna get more intense.
Yeah, although it's interesting, right? Because I don't think, I mean, it wasn't, I'm sure they did horrible things to each other, but they couldn't have been so outwardly horrible that, you know, like the press wouldn't have been all over it at the time, right? So
yeah, I don't know though. Press at that time was very different.
Yeah,
first
that's
of all.
True.
And second of all, I don't know what was in the press at that time. Do you know what was in the press at that time?
Apparently, that by the way, the lady in the film, the lady in the movie, the press, like that's a real person, and she wore crazy hats. So,
really,
yeah. So,
Stockard Channing, I believe, is playing her, right?
Yeah, I believe so. So,
no, wait, not Stockard Channing.
Wait, hold on.
Is
let's
it
see.
Stockard Channing? What's that woman's name? I get her confused with Stockard Channing. I don't think it is her.
I don't know. Is it Judy Davis? Judy Davis, I think, is who that is, right? Hedda Hopper? Does that sound right?
Hedda Hopper, yeah.
Judy Davis is playing her.
She looks a little like Stockard Channing, or am I crazy?
A little bit. No one knows. No one who's listening knows.
No, I confuse them all the
Stockard
freaking
Channing
time.
Is, though. So.
Those are the exact two people that I confuse. You know, did you ever see a really weird movie about a woman who like had a baby with Stalin?
I did not. Did not see any movies about a woman who had a baby with Stalin.
See, now, of course, I cannot remember which of them was in it. So it's going to be difficult for me to figure out which friggin' one it was.
Well, thanks for that tangent cul-de-sac.
Yeah, I really blew it. I think it must be Judy Davis, though, because Stockard Channing is like the mainstream Judy Davis. Is that is that a reasonable thing for me to say?
No, not at all.
Okay, cool.
All right,
I'm gonna back out of this room slowly.
Let's
back into the bushes a la Homer Simpson.
Do we have anything else we want to cover on television?
Children of the Revolution is the film, and it was Judy Davis.
Thank God we found that out.
Yeah, it also has Jeffrey Rush, Sam Neill, and F. Murray Abraham.
Which one?
Very, very strange comedy movie directed by Peter Duncan in 1996.
I'm sorry I missed it.
No, I wouldn't say you are.
You're right, I'm not at all sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
Mm-hmm. anyway, it's Judy Davis in Feud, not Stockard Channing, and I'll try to keep them straight in the future.
Please do. Any more TV we got to cover? Should we jump into sports?
No, I think it's sportsy time.
Sportsy time, and it's tourney time. I'm very excited for this.
Tourney time. Woo.
I mean, I'm assuming like me, you don't really count the first four.
The what?
The first four. The thing that happened last night with the.
What are you?
I have to say, look, I am not. It's very obviously, you know. It's the move is to bash the first four, right? Like it's ridiculous. They're expanding.
I'm not
this
bashing it. I just
like,
don't care at all.
You know, the traditionalists hate it, but I don't mind that USC and Providence are going to play tonight for a spot in the tournament. Like I'm not glued to it like I am the Thursday and Friday, but I'll flip that on. I'm cool that exists. You know what I mean? I don't think it's such a bad thing. I do sort of wish that they made it all at large qualifiers that were in these play-in games. You know what I mean? Where like if you are some team from a crappy conference and you win your tournament, I feel like you shouldn't have to play another game to be in the tournament. You should just be in. But I'm fine with USC and Providence and Wake Forest and Kansas State battling it out for that last spot. You know what I mean? I'm
really
good with that.
I would have expected you to go the opposite direction.
Really? Just because those teams aren't as good?
Clearly.
But, I mean, I think if you're going to have automatic qualifiers for winning a conference,
then they should make them
automatic qualifiers. There are plenty of at-large spots You know what I mean? A lot of these teams that play in these playing games are capable of winning games in the tournament, and that's happened before, sure. But they didn't really do enough to get in anyway. So I don't mind making them play one extra. I think that feels right. You know, I think it would suck to, you know, a lot of these guys, like, just making the tournament is their dream. You know what I mean? I think
and
it
that's
sucks.
That's your one moment, and then it's gone without ever really starting.
Exactly.
I see what you're saying.
So that's kind of where I'm at. And I think just from a television standpoint, I mean, I feel like, you know, Turner would rather have games between, you know, actual programs on those nights.
Well, I think that's probably a more salient point is if you're Turner or CBS or whoever it is, you can sell a first round tournament game involving a garbage team no one's heard of, but selling sort of an ad hoc one off with two teams no one's ever heard of is a tough job.
Yeah, it's tough. And stuff. And then I don't know. I mean, did you watch any? You were busy last night, so I'm guessing you didn't watch any of those games. You probably wouldn't have.
I was at Oracle Arena watching real basketball, so yeah.
But the most notable thing that happened was
real basketball is a bit of a stretch for what happened between the Warriors and Sixers last night. But yeah.
One guy from New Orleans choked another guy from New Orleans in a huddle. That was the big,
what?
Big thing of that game. Yeah.
Someone choked, like, choked players?
Choked a teammate in the huddle, yeah.
And then two hands around the neck.
Two hand choke. Yep. And he was like, you know, he was like their good big man, and they had to bench him for the rest of the game after that, and they lost by two. So that.
Oh my god.
That was the thing. Actually, they
that's pretty
lost
amazing.
By one.
I'm
yeah.
kind of sad I missed it now.
Sorry, no, they lost by one. It was 67-66 was the final. Yeah.
Heartbreak City.
Yeah, so, you know, who knows? The No Names can provide some drama. So
yeah. No. Well. But that's what the tournament's about, right? And I actually know less about college basketball this year than ever before, which is really saying something.
I'd say that's probably true of America at this point, right? Don't we as America know less about college basketball than maybe ever before?
Maybe. I don't really know because I've never been a big college basketball guy. Yeah. But so what usually happens is I check in here and there down the stretch of the regular season, and then I watch conference tournaments. And for various reasons, I just haven't watched a minute of college tournaments, which is to say I haven't watched more than 5 minutes of college basketball all year long. And here's what I can tell you about college basketball. Markel Fultz, who's probably the number one pick, is not in the tournament. And Lonzo Ball, who's probably one of the top three picks, is in the tournament and plays for UCLA and has a dad that is the only thing I want to talk about relating to college basketball.
It is kind of amazing, and I know we're starting off for tournament preview by talking about a guy who's not in it, but Markel Fultz is probably going to go number one in the NBA draft this year.
Looks like it, yeah.
He plays for the University of Washington.
Right.
Who finished 11th in the Pac-12. How do you have the number one draft pick? There's only five tournament teams in the Pac-12. They finished 11th.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not defending it.
It shows you that coaches have a lot of impact in college basketball, and not always for the good.
A huge impact,
I would think, right?
Coaches have a huge impact in college sports in general. Just look at college football. That's all you need to figure that out. Or look at the dominance of Duke over the years. And I may not be a fan of Mike Krzyzewski's, but he's clearly a good basketball coach. And you know, there's a reason. You look even at a team like Arizona, who. You can draw a pretty straight line between Arizona's success or lack thereof and when they've had good coaches or not.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at
Duke. They had a great coach in Lute Olson. They were successful all the time. They lost him. It got bad for a few years without Lute Olson and with some not-so-good coaches. And then they get Sean Miller locked in and take back off.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of that stuff matters because your coaches get your players. And then they coach them.
That's
sort of a thing.
Stuff you just described.
But yeah, you look at Duke this year. I mean, Jeff Capel is an experienced college basketball coach.
Yep.
He fills in for Krzyzewski for like a month, and like Duke's like 500 team in that stretch. Yep. So it's you know, and that's the reason why they're not currently a one seed. You know.
No, I mean Washington is terrible. Look. it's coaching, and it's also the rest of the roster, and it's also the fact that, you know, great as he is, presumptive number one pick though he may be, he's like 19 years old.
Right. There is that. But so is Lonzo Ball. And
well, and he's got a better basketball team.
He has a much better basketball team. That's correct. UCLA, if you haven't seen them yet, they're, you know, I know people think of college basketball as a lot of like 27 passes around the perimeter while someone plays zone defense and then someone takes a shot. UCLA is not like that. Lonzo Ball is a tremendous point guard, and he's got lots of guys around him who are very interesting offensive players and can shoot. They don't play a lot of defense over there, which is why they're not, you know, a one seed in this tournament right now, but they are a very fun team to watch. This tournament, I think, is going to be a really good tournament. You know, as an NBA fan, that there's a deep draft class coming out.
Yeah, and that's why I'm here, basically. So, right? I mean, that's basically what I'm doing here is I'm scouting.
Yeah, so there's
and that's how I always watch. And usually I'm a little more informed coming into the tournament, so I have at least some basis for filling out my bracket and throwing my $30 down the drain. But, you know, this year I have no idea what's going on. That being said, I am still very interested in watching as much of the tournament itself as possible, because this is the next crop, and it's supposedly a very, very strong crop of NBA players, and the NBA is my thing. So I'm super excited to watch Lonzo Ball. I expect them to make at least a couple of game run into hopefully the Sweet 16, so I can watch them.
Well, I mean,
UCLA
Kentucky matchup or rematch-up in the Sweet 16, I think, is the one that, you know, you got to have your
That's
eye on.
That's what I would like to see. Yeah. That's very much what I would like to see. Don't sleep on the 7-10 in that bracket, though, because, again, I know nothing about college basketball now, except I do know that Dayton and Wichita State are not to be trifled with.
That is correct. There are analytics folks that will tell you that Wichita is one of the 10 best teams in the country. So,
which is interesting because they're a 10 seed in the tournament. Yeah. But
so you can tell the committee not looking at analytics so much.
Things I'm excited about include Lonzo Ball and UCLA. Josh Jackson. Is it Josh Jackson at Kansas?
At Kansas.
Or am I just focused on Pacey? Okay. The kid at Duke whose name Tatum, who is
Jason
someone
Tatum,
I'm very interested in seeing. And then the Fightin' Northwestern Wildcats. First tournament ever. Yeah. Evanston, represent. What up?
You didn't go to Northwestern, right?
No, I grew up in the shadows of Dyke Stadium.
Right. You just lived near it. So you're stoked about it for that reason.
I mean, I went to Pomona College. I can't root for them in anything. So Northwestern has been my de facto college team since I was about 6 years old.
No wonder you hate college basketball.
Well, no wonder I'm unimpressed by college sports in general.
That's probably true.
I mean, Chicago is the best city in the country, but it does not have thriving college sports.
No, it does not. And I feel like Notre Dame, in a lot of ways, is almost the de facto Chicago like college team.
Well, yes, it is. Except it's a love-hate relationship. If you are a Midwesterner in general, but a Chicagoan in specific, you are either a diehard Notre Dame fan or so disgusted with diehard Notre Dame fans that you just want everything about that school to fail, with the sole exception of your good friend Bob Fitzgerald. I'm in the latter category.
Yeah, and look, I think Chicago has probably a lot of vibe like Atlanta does in that. I mean, Atlanta, there's a little bit more local flavor with Georgia and Georgia Tech, but like,
it's everyone from
it's the Mecca for the region. So you get all the alumni bases for across the entire South, or in your case, the entire Midwest. And so
there's like 5 to 12 bars for every Big Ten school in the city of Chicago.
Yeah. Now this year seems to be a very down year for the Big Ten. And I'm going to go on record as saying I do not like, you know, I think Michigan's got a chance to do a little damage because they're, you know, because of their style of play.
I saw about 5 minutes of Michigan.
They're not particularly good. I'm not telling you that they're good.
That was terrible basketball. Yeah. It's just so hard to watch.
Wisconsin, not good this year. Michigan State, usually, you know, and look, maybe Izzo will pull some sort of crazy Izzo magic, but that team is bad. Like, they're bad.
I mean, here's my tournament. I can give you a tournament preview if you want.
Okay.
Again, I know nothing about college basketball. Villanova will fail because they're a one seed, and that just can't possibly work out well for them. I refuse to believe that.
yeah, to find an instance where that was the case, you have to go all the way back to the last tournament that they won as a one seed.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I get it. Like, allegedly, Jay Wright has changed what it means to be Villanova. I'm not buying in. They'll lose in the Sweet 16,
National championship or no.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I don't buy it. Baylor is going down super early.
Just because they're Baylor?
Because they're disgusting.
Baylor has this is one of those coach things. Like, if you believe that coaches matter – like, it's not an accident that Baylor has flamed out in these tournaments repeatedly. And then, you know, they have one of those guys that can get him on campus talent-wise, but then you don't know about the X's and O's afterwards. So,
speaking of which, Kentucky also going to fail.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I kind of like Kentucky.
If they don't lose to Dayton or Wichita, they will lose to UCLA. Again, I know nothing.
Okay.
Also, watch out for Butler in the South. Again, no knowledge.
these are things you heard Jay Bill say once, or
I haven't watched a minute of coverage. These okay. are completely blind predictions.
All right,
I think Florida State is dangerous in the West. I love the Vermont Catamounts to win a game or two as a 13 seed, and don't sleep on Oregon. That's all I've got for you.
All right. I agreed and disagreed with most of those.
Well, if people are following along, I recommend listening to Derek Madden, who has seen probably more than 10 minutes of college basketball this season.
The Vermont pick may actually be kind of good. I'm not sure. I'm not totally sure about Purdue, and Vermont did have a pretty good year. So that's a plausible upset. I'd say it's
nice. Nice. I got one. I didn't pick a 5-12. Hold on. Give me Princeton over Notre Dame, because F Notre Dame at every opportunity.
All right. My 5-12, is one people here are very nervous about, but I like Middle Tennessee State over the Gophers.
I played a concert at Middle Tennessee State once. So
the Golden Gophers. Yeah. I'm a former Nashville resident myself, so it's a battle of two places I used to live. Middle Tennessee State is in Nashville, right? I'm pretty sure.
Still do. Love that. No, I don't believe it is.
Oh, it's not?
I think it's in the middle of nowhere, or at least I remember it being in the middle.
If not, it's in the Nashville metropolitan area, right?
It's in Murfreesboro.
Yes, that is in the Nashville area.
Okay.
Okay. I feel a little bit better about that now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in the very extended Nashville area, yeah. I would say.
It's in the same area code. That's good enough. Good enough for me.
Several suburbs out, it appears to be. I remember the campus being perfectly nice, but far too far from civilization for my tastes.
I think it's going to be an interesting tournament because you do like the difference between the one line and the three line is pretty slight. Like, you can make a reasonable case for UCLA, who are a three seed, as a one seed.
Right.
And, you know, you could make a case for Gonzaga as a three seed. You know, so.
Yeah. Louisville looks like they have a nice path, actually.
Louisville does look like they have a nice path. I don't love them. They tend to just sort of disappear on offense for stretches. And I think in a six-game tournament, somewhere along the way, that comes to bite you in the ass. So that whole, like, I'm a little down on that whole
Midwest.
Bottom part of the Midwest bracket there. Yeah. Which means I could see like a high seed escaping, which is kind of why I was talking about Michigan, who, again, I don't think are any good. But I think it somehow,
nice little run.
Yeah, wind up like fluking their way out of there.
They're on a roll too. I mean, they won the Big Ten Conference tournament even after a plane crash, basically. So
in practice uniforms, which is pretty great. But yeah, like I mean, Duke can do some real damage in this tournament. Carolina can do some real damage in this tournament. You know, Kansas, a lot of those big powers. You know, one of UCLA or Kentucky. I think it, like that showdown against Carolina in the South. Looks like that could be pretty fascinating, and I would bet on those teams actually showing up for that game. So you know, I think it's going to be a really competitive tournament, and I'm gonna say, you know, this is not going to be one of those first round duds. I'm pretty excited. I'm going to Vegas this weekend.
Nice.
So I'm going to be in a gambling situation
for Vegas.
It might be, man. Just when
it's
you're talking
this
about
or
the,
it's one of the two four game NFL weekends, right? It's got to either be weekend one of the tournament, or it's like divisional or wild card weekend.
Yeah, you know, opening weekend NFL when you have a full slate of games and you're just psyched that football's back. I've done that one. That's pretty great, too.
Okay. All right.
But, yeah, I mean, I think this weekend might be the weekend to be there.
It's definitely Mount Rushmore of Vegas weekends.
Yeah, because you want to be in a giant room that is literally wall-to-wall TVs.
Exactly.
With people who have financial stakes in various outcomes, yelling at the top of their lungs.
In outcomes that they have no other possible reason for caring about.
Yeah. But they really do. They really do care about Troy, you know what I
mean?
Because they got.
You've
money
never
on the
seen
line.
Someone so upset about whether or not South Dakota State gets within 33
right.
points,
and you're betting on 19-year-olds to like do things at some sort of consistent level, and it's ridiculous and great. So
very silly, very very silly. Yeah.
So yeah, so I'm all kinds of fired up to enjoy this tournament, and I have the feeling like it's going to deliver. Like I mean, all right, so you're a non-college basketball guy. Obviously, we've established this, but like.
Yes.
That Thursday and Friday at work where
there's
games going on all day, like that's...
Wait, I'm sorry. That Thursday and Friday what now?
Sorry. When most people are at work. like that's a great day.
Yeah, usually I'm at work, but
stuff's
no,
happening
now,
and like, you know.
I'm actually excited to not be working. And in fact, I've done my best to clear my schedule, although I am working another basketball game tomorrow night here. I plan to be in front of the TV / computer / phone all at once, streaming games like a madman.
All right, so you're in. And I do – that is one of the nice innovations is that, you know, Turner getting involved in this whole thing. Every game's on. Thank God for that. It's hard for me to imagine that it was not that long ago when you had to have, like, your dumb iPad streaming in the office or you know, even years before that, when you would like
be waiting, watch stuff.
You'd be hoping that they would flash out of the look-in, and like if you were,
right.
if like you know, a local team was playing, you knew you were never going to see anything else that was happening anywhere, and you might miss buzzer beaters and stuff. Thank God, now everything's on. And they've got that scoreboard up there in every game you're watching so that you can immediately flip to something better if you see it up there. It's great. It's great. I love these 4 days. You know, they just have an appeal all on their own. At the end, you won't really remember the first two rounds in terms of whether the tournament was good or not. You're going to remember, you know, some of the later stuff. But these 2 days, these first 4 days where you have them are amazing. And just the random people who rise up to be stars. I can't wait.
Stuff's great. And it sets the tone for how excited you are about the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
I mean, I have to imagine the excitement level of the first two rounds go a great deal of the way towards determining the ratings of the thing overall.
Well, yes. And also, who gets out of those? Here's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like you're rooting for these upsets and you're really excited that they happen. But when they happen, they can ruin
things.
The second and third rounds.
That's totally true.
Yeah,
with some very rare exceptions.
Sometimes you have a really exciting first round, but it does kind of wind up crapping out the rest of the tournament. So,
I think probably for entertainment's sake, what we really want is like super competitive first round, but only one real big upset.
Indeed. You know what? Look, I'm going to take Duke losing anytime I can get Duke losing.
No doubt. Unfortunately,
you know, and it's more.
I'm worried. I'm worried about Duke.
If it happens
again, I know nothing, but it is from the analysis that I have taken in by osmosis. You know, as usual, there is a lot of Duke love, and that makes me concerned.
Yeah, they seem to have figured it out just in time, and it's so annoying.
That makes me angry. I mean, super angry.
They finished fifth in the ACC. Fifth. So
super duper angry.
But yeah, they're gonna figure it out. It's that's what they do. They're Duke.
Hey, look. Well, you know, you and me rooting together against whoever against Duke. You know, so
we are all Troy.
Yeah. We are all Troy.
All right. Let's.
What did Brad Pitt say in the movie? I don't know. Whatever he said.
I never saw that movie.
No, I don't know that I did either. I have some memories of it. It's hard to say if they're just of the previews or what.
I doubt he had any good lines, to be honest.
Yeah, no, you're certainly right about that.
All right, let's get out of here. We've got homework.
Oh yeah.
To assign.
Yep.
You want to go first?
Yeah, I'm very excited about the new Spoon album, which, based on your lukewarm response to that when I said it before the podcast, is going to be a lot like all the other things I've recommended. But I love the band Spoon. They're one of my favorite bands to listen to, one of my favorite bands to see live. And although my favorite album of theirs may have come out over a decade ago, I still think they're putting out good music. And I'm excited to hear the new disc, which is called Hot Thoughts, yeah, and comes out on Friday. So, you know, please, everyone out there, remind Derek Madden to listen to Spoon over the weekend.
Please
so
do,
because
I will certainly forget. And in fairness, I also really like the band Spoon. I'm just not super excited about this particular Spoon record.
Well, hopefully that just leaves all that much more room for you to be pleasantly surprised.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. And then I am assigning you the television show American Crime.
This is interesting.
Here's the thing is, like, you know, we've often talked about the state of network television, how the drama can be sort of bankrupt. I think this is the best possible version of a network television drama.
Now, is this an anthology?
It is an anthology. One of the cool things about American Crime is they tell a different story each season, so it's an anthology. Okay. They use mostly a company of actors, so there are a lot of actors who have been in all three seasons. Okay. Some new people jump in and out. Very good. Regina King, who I think is just one of the best actresses working today, has been in all three seasons. Felicity Huffman, who is excellent. Lily Taylor. Uh-oh. Timothy Hutton. Like, it's a high-grade cast. John Ridley, who wrote 12 Years a Slave, is kind of the main guy behind it. Obviously, I've only seen the one episode that's aired of this season, but Alan Sepinwall, who's not a guy to be taken lightly on this, says the third season is amazing and sort of compares the scope of it to The Wire, in that, you know, anytime you throw that out there, it's a tough thing for a show to compare to. But it's a show that's sort of looking at an individual event and people who may sort of only be abstractedly connected to tell a much larger story about what's going on in America. And like I said, high ideals for a network show.
This season, correct?
This season, yeah. I'm suggesting season three.
No, like, there's no need to go back.
There's no need to go back. Both the first two seasons are available on Netflix. Okay. I kind of got in at season two, and I thought it was pretty good. Okay. So I'd say, you know, watch it, but that's not the homework.
The homework is episode one of season three.
Episode one of season three, and episode two will have aired by the time we meet again. So if you want
first
to check
two
that out
episodes,
too.
Then yeah,
check
I can
that
do
out.
That.
I think I think you'll find it's pretty interesting. And
I mean, I don't want people to abuse this or use this to take advantage of me. But if you compare something to The Wire, I'll probably at least give it a shot.
Yeah, and look, there are no cops. I just say there are no cops. I have a feeling there will be cops.
There will be cops. If that was the alternative title when they had Daniel Day-Lewis cast,
exactly,
but he backed out at the last minute in American Crime.
But yeah, I think, American Crime. I'm curious to see what you think. And I think that on that note, we can get the hell out of here.
All right. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.